Welcome to Pull Up a Chair. I'm Bina Mehta, the chair of KPMG in the UK, and in each episode, I talk to some of the world's most influential leaders and thinkers about sustainable growth, what it means to them and why it matters. We also explore the challenges and opportunities of delivering growth responsibly and ethically in a way that meets the needs of people, planet, and profit. Today, I'm joined by Jonathan Bomfrey, Amazon's country manager for the UK and Ireland. Since being appointed country manager in 2020, John has helped Amazon grow during a period of unprecedented disruption from COVID-19 to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and more recently, the cost of living crisis. Having joined in 2011, John has held roles across its media, home and leisure and fashion divisions. And so I'm sure we'll be able to provide unique insight into a business that touches the lives of almost all of my listeners and hundreds of millions of consumers globally. Amazon is one of the most innovative businesses in the world. So there's a lot to talk about in this episode: artificial intelligence and how it's really going to impact society, sustainable shopping, both from a consumer and business perspective, and how to make sure our workforce is fit for all the change coming down the track. John Bomfrey, please pull up a chair. So welcome, John, to the podcast. You joined Amazon in 2011. And at that time, Amazon had 2,500 employees. You are now at 75,000 employees, delivering millions of parcels a day. What an incredible journey you would have been on. And I would love to explore how you've delivered that sustainable growth.
Well, first of all, Bina, thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I think in terms of what sustainable growth is, sometimes it's easy to define something by what it isn't. And for me, unsustainable growth is pursuit of the profit motive with regard to only your shareholder. If you like, it's sort of the Milton Friedman doctrine on steroids. And I think that's what unsustainable growth is. For me, sustainable growth is running a business in a way that creates economic value, but serves the needs of all of your stakeholders, whether that's customers, whether that's your employees, or whether that's the communities where you operate. At Amazon, we have a number of leadership principles. And one of the most recent ones we introduced just a couple of years ago talked to this exact point. It's called Success and Scale Bring Broad Responsibility. And what that says is, we started in a garage, but we're not there anymore. We're a big business, and the things that we do have second order impacts. And as a leader, I think it's really important that you're conscious of all of your stakeholders and the impact you have in the communities where you operate, and indeed on the planet at large as well.
I've known you some time, and when you talk about your responsibility to community, comes really through loud and clear on a personal level as much as an organization. And we're going to talk a little bit about the work around social mobility later, because I know you're extremely passionate and committed to that. Before I do that, but you talk about what it's not in the pursuit of profit purely, but do you think it is possible, and I guess through your lens of Amazon, do you think it is possible to meet the needs of people, planet, and profit?
Absolutely. I think it's essential that we do that. At Amazon, we have sort of four overall guiding principles. That sort of obsess over customers, focus on the long term, commitment to operational excellence, and a passion for invention. And we apply those principles to all stakeholders, to all parts of our business. So if I think about planet, for example, back in 2019, we came up with something called the Climate Pledge. And that was our commitment to be net carbon zero by 2040, 10 years, or net zero carbon rather, 10 years ahead of the Paris Agreement. We've since signed up over 400 businesses globally, including more than 100 in the UK, to follow us on that mission. We then look at the different parts of our business. So if you start with energy, we're the world's largest purchaser, corporate purchaser of renewable energy, and also in the UK as well. We've got five wind farms. We've got 29 solar installations. And when fully operational, they will power enough electricity, the equivalent of more than 1 million homes. We've made a commitment to invest £300 million to decarbonize and electrify our transportation network. We've got more than 1,000 electric vans. We've got 9 electric HGVs. We've got what we call micro-mobility hubs in London, in Manchester, and Glasgow. And right down to the consumer experience, we've taken out all plastic packaging from parcels you receive from Amazon over the past couple of years. So at every level of our business, we're applying those same principles to how we engage more broadly in the planet. And, you know, I remain optimistic about what we can achieve here.
It's hard to imagine life before Amazon and, you know, this sort of 24-hour delivery expectation that many consumers have. And we hear a lot about the impact that may or may not have had on the high street. I was wondering if you had a view of what the retail industry, as we look forward, what that might feel like and look like?
Well, Bina, I've been in retail now for 18 years. And the reason that I was attracted to the retail industry was the fact it was dynamic, really fast-paced. It was all about innovation. It was all about focusing on the customer. And what I've come to appreciate over time is the role that the retail industry plays in the broader UK industry, in the broader UK economy. It's often a gateway employer. Lots of people's first jobs are in retail. So it's really, really important. What we know with retail is that the switching costs are really, really low. And that old adage that if you have a good experience, you'll tell one person, but if you have a bad experience, you'll tell 10 people. So I think the most important thing that certainly that we do at Amazon is we focus all the time on earning the trust of our customers and making sure that when they have an experience, it's as good an experience as possible. But it's also important you cannot stand still. You always have to try and anticipate where the proverbial puck is going. Where is customer interest and demand going to go? And that's something we spend a lot of time thinking about as well. As one small example, we're going to be bringing drone deliveries to the UK later this year.
Oh, very exciting. Very exciting. So I don't have to be at home to receive my delivery anymore.
I can't promise it will be in central London.
You talked a bit about sort of the employee base, you know, so obviously Amazon has 75,000 employees from all backgrounds, all across the UK, different types of jobs. And we talk about productivity in business more generally. And productivity is something that I think the UK in particular has grappled with. As a global business, is there anything that you're seeing globally around productivity that is something that business leaders here could take away?
Great question. I think first of all, Amazon UK is the third largest store that we have globally. And the UK is often the first place that innovation will come outside of the US. Talking specifically about productivity, we were one of the first countries to receive investment in robotics, in automated warehousing. And I think there's some really interesting learnings for productivity there. When we started introducing robotics into our warehouses, there was a lot of fear that sort of the robots would replace people. But actually, the opposite has happened. Where we, the old model, where you'd have big warehouse and employees would get a list of products and they'd sort of walk up and down these long aisles, that's been replaced by the robots effectively moving things around and bringing the products to the employee. So when we put robotics into a warehouse, three things happen. The first thing is we're able to carry many more products for customers. So we offer that more choice. The second thing that we see is we're able to employ more people. And the roles that we're employing people into are higher skilled roles, because now you need people who are going to maintain the robots, who are able to go onto the robotics field, and they're higher skilled roles than we would have had previously. And the last thing that we see is that our productivity goes up really significantly. So as a recipient of early investment within sort of the broader Amazon network, we're really seeing the benefits of investment in automation and robotics. And that's having really beneficial impacts on our employees as well.
What you're showing is that you're an early adopter. You've demonstrated productivity gains, but not at the cost of jobs.
That's right.
And there's a learning from that. And I think a lot of business leaders might actually be reaching out to you to find out how and how and why. Because it is a challenge, right? There's a great opportunity, but it's how you harness that opportunity. We've talked about, you know, the number of employees. That is a very large workforce that you're inspiring and leading. How do you create that culture and environment of loyalty and support, you know, that Amazon has been known for?
Well, if I go back to talking about the leadership principles, when we introduced success and scale, bring broad responsibility, we also introduced another one that said that we want to aspire to be Earth's best employer. So we set out a very big, big vision. I think in terms of how we think about engaging employees, I think what's really important is sharing purpose. And Amazon from day one has had a very clear focus on customers. But the way that we translate that, for example, into our operations teams, we talk about delivering smiles. So the reason that our amazing employees are, whether they're in a delivery station, whether they're in what we call a fulfillment center, their job is all about delivering smiles. Maybe that last minute birthday gift or that item that a customer has really saved up money for. So I think it's very important to have purpose, but it's also really important. More than 90% of our employees tell us that the reason that they join Amazon is because they want to develop new skills. So having clear purpose, giving people the opportunity to develop new skills, to learn new things, I think are really important. And that's what we focused on every single day.
I know you're very passionate about sort of helping people improve their skills. How is Amazon sort of helping colleagues upskill, reskill, pivot?
Well, we have a program called Career Choice that I'm really proud about. And actually, we're celebrating our 10th anniversary of the program this year. This is a program where we will prepay 95% of tuition and associated costs for nationally recognized qualifications. And these can be in multiple sectors. So it's things like technology, in finance, in HR, HGV driving is one of our most popular courses. Last year, we had more than 5,000 of our employees join one of those courses. And actually, we had the 100,000th global career choice participant, happened to be a UK individual, a chap called Sahail. And Sahail was studying for his, just finished his HGV qualification last year. So career choice is one good example, but another great example is apprenticeships. Last year, we celebrated our 10th anniversary of offering apprenticeships. And we've had more than 5,000 people qualify from with an apprenticeship at Amazon. We've currently got more than 1,600 people who are studying on an apprenticeship. We've just announced we're launching another 1,000 roles this year. We've got more than 40 schemes. And I think one of the things that we can do as a big employer is offer those opportunities to retrain, to develop skills. And we see that in higher loyalty from our staff as well.
You talk about innovation as well. You talked about, you know, passion for innovation. How do you foster that culture of innovation as well?
We talk about something called our day one culture. And the phrase day one comes from the first letter to shareholders that Jeff Bezos wrote in 1997. And actually, we publish that letter every single year as a reminder in our annual report. And it's a brilliant read. I read it once a year. And we talk about, I think it's day one of the internet. But the idea behind day one is we want to make sure that we've got a culture that looks at the future and sees opportunity. And that means we really want to embrace innovation. So there's a few things that we do internally to keep that focus on innovation. The first thing is focus on customers. And one of the ways that we do that is if we're going to do any kind of innovation in part of the, any part of the business, we always start by writing a press release. We will write, what is this innovation going to, what's it going to do, and what will customers say about it in the future? And that means that before we write a single line of code, we don't do things because it's, you know, it's some really great technology we can use. We'll only do things if we're clear that there are benefits to customers. So we call that our PR FAQ, FAQ frequently asked questions. So that's one thing that we do. Another thing that we've always done is we seek to have small independent teams that are in control of their own destiny, rather than having this big sort of pyramid structure where everything has to sort of flow up to the top. So we talked about this concept of a two pizza team. The theory is that no team should be bigger than can be fed by two brackets, American-sized brackets, pizzas. That's probably about 10 people. And we also want to make sure that those teams are kind of empowered to own their own destiny. And so we spend a lot of time talking about the difference between reversible and non-reversible decisions. We talk about them as one-way versus two-way doors. The idea being that if a decision can be reversible, a two-way door decision, well, you know what? Teams should go ahead and make those decisions. I think the other thing that's really important about innovation is you have to be willing to take risks and you have to be willing to accept failure. And we often talk about Amazon being a great place to fail. I think this year marks the 10th anniversary of the Fire Phone. And while I didn't see you come in with your Fire Phone today, Bina, you know, the Fire Phone didn't work, but the technology spawned Alexa. And then the last thing I'd say about innovation is that people often think of innovation as the new Alexa, like a big, shiny new product. The reality is that's maybe 20% or less of innovation. Innovation is often in what you're already doing, and that's about 80% of our focus. So if we talk about speed, for example, you know, the basic premise of how you get a product to a customer, you've got a warehouse, you've got a van, you've got a driver. It's pretty basic, hasn't really changed, but we put a lot of focus on that. And just last year, we were able, through a bunch of changes and innovations to our processes, bring down our fastest delivery last year was actually only 75 minutes from the moment a customer clicked buy to when we delivered the product. And that's down to innovation every single day in our core processes.
Somebody once said to me, you know, a long-term thinking is really just a series of short-term thinking. I'd be intrigued to understand how you, as the leader of Amazon here, have navigated that.
Yeah, So we're very fortunate that right from day one, we've had a focus on the long term. And Jeff Bezos talks about a willingness to be misunderstood. And it means that some of the investment timeframes we'll look at, whereas other businesses that I've worked in before would have a shorter term horizon, we'll often look at a 5-year or a 7-year horizon. But the UK, Amazon UK, we've invested disproportionately here. We've actually invested £56 billion in the UK since 2010. And when we look at why we invest, kind of in places, there are sort of three big reasons. The first of those is there consumer demand? Well, absolutely there is in the UK. Secondly, is there a ready supply of talent? In the UK, absolutely, world-class universities and places that people want to live. But the third reason that we've invested in the UK is because the UK has a historical reputation for a world-class regulatory environment. And if we go back to the dark days of COVID, early days of COVID, we were looking to create two COVID testing labs, and we could have put them anywhere in the world. We wanted to put one in the US, and one could have been anywhere else. And we ended up putting that testing lab in Salford. And the reason that we came to the UK was because of the regulatory environment, because we were able to work side by side in the proverbial sandbox with regulators. And I was really proud that we were able to bring that investment into the UK. Now, clearly there's a lot of things going on with regulation. And I think that historically this has been a real source of competitive advantage for the UK. So important, I think, to keep this at the front of the agenda as well.
And I think it's also worth reminding people that you are a big investor into the regions. You know, we often talk about the UK and everybody sort of focuses on sort of the central hub of London. But actually, you're a big investor in the UK. You talked about your COVID testing lab being in Salford. And investment is really important to grow, right? And it's important to grow because you're reinvesting in your colleagues as much as your customer offerings and choices. Is there, apart from the regulatory landscape being a very, very bright, you know, light for the UK, is there anything else you think the UK can do to really attract even more investment to help support growth?
I think sometimes we can be a little bit shy about singing about our successes. Certainly as I talk to other people who manage different kind of countries within Amazon, they look quite enviously at the UK. We do have a proud history of innovation and a really burgeoning tech sector. I do think kind of probably top of my list would be the regulatory environment.
Yep.
But, you know, I think sometimes we can be a little bit British and a little bit shy to kind of really sing about the great things that we've done in the past. So I think we should address that as well.
Yeah. And you've just talked about the tech sector. And one thing about Amazon is you can't think about Amazon as just a delivery. You've also got Amazon Web Services, which most of us are using in some capacity, whether it's work or home. And so I'd like to turn to technology. Sure. And AI in particular. And as consumers who buy from Amazon, I'm assuming you're using lots of AI already because you've talked about robotics. What's your prediction around how AI will really impact the way we shop as opposed to helping you be more productive?
Yep.
How do you think that interface with consumers is going to change?
Well, we've been using AI in the customer experience for 20 years. At Amazon. So as a customer, if you go on and you see people who bought X also bought Y, that's AI. That was actually developed in Edinburgh, that piece of technology that we use globally. And whether it's in that, whether it's in robotics, whether it's in the routes that drivers take, whether that's in Alexa, we're using AI all the time already. But it's really generative AI in the last 18 months that sprung into the collective consciousness. And I think generative AI is going to be the most transformative technology for the retail industry since the advent of the internet. It's going to be huge. And the way that we're seeing that play out at Amazon is every single team is thinking about ways in which AI can be used to benefit customers, that could benefit our partners, whether that's the 100,000 small businesses who sell on Amazon or our suppliers, whether that benefits employees as well. So we're really thinking about all of those things. And I think it's going to be an incredible time to be in retail, super exciting, particularly over the next couple of years.
Businesses that are adopting and embedding AI, I think the challenge is to adopt it safely and to have trust in what you're using. And you've obviously been doing it for a number of years. So I'm going to pick your brain as a leader for the benefit of others who might be listening. As organizations, large or small, embed AI, how do you as Amazon sort of govern that? Is that sort of done by country, or how do you approach that safety net?
Well, as a large multinational company, sort of the ideal scenario would be that you have a globally consistent regulatory regime and environment. And of course, AI doesn't respect national boundaries. I think the UK deserves an awful lot of praise for the leadership role it took both with the AI Safety Summit last year, but also coming up with a principles-based approach. Given the speed at which generative AI is developing, I think it's critical that we get all the major players, the nation states, the policymakers, the tech companies together. That's exactly what the UK did last year with the Safety Summit. And as a business, we're really happy to engage with governments, with policymakers everywhere we work to talk about this, to share our learnings from what we see. And of course, affirm our commitment to everywhere we operate, to operate with the practices of responsible AI.
So KPMG and Amazon are supporters of London Tech Week, and I'm really interested in your views on how we keep London and the UK at the forefront of global innovation, and also what opportunities our global status offers our sort of fast-growing, ambitious companies.
Well, Bina, it's great that we're both involved with London Tech Week. And I think the UK and London comes from a real position of strength. I think we're the third largest tech economy globally. And I think the opportunity that we have is all about skills. We need to make sure that we're getting a diverse pipeline of skills into the sector. So we recently did a survey with AWS, and what we found was more than half of businesses are looking for AI talent, But those businesses who are looking for it, three quarters of them cannot find the talent that they need. So it's really important that we address skills gaps. That's one of the reasons why we've come up with an AI-ready skills pledge globally with AWS, where we want to train 2 million people to give them AI skills completely free by the end of next year. But I also think it's really important that as a country, we start developing those skills as early as possible. And that's why we're starting at school. We have a fabulous program called Get IT, where we'll encourage girls in particular, around the ages of 12 to 13, to adopt STEM subjects for GCSE. And why we're also partnering with Teach First to increase the number of computer science teachers. But overall, I think the UK is in a real position of strength. And if there was one thing that we could do to really capitalize on the opportunity, it would be to focus on skills, skills, skills.
I know you're very passionate about social mobility. You know, Amazon and you personally have been very heavily involved in the Social Mobility Awards. How does Amazon live and breathe social mobility?
Well, I think being one of the first times we met when I was presenting you with an award at the Social Mobility Awards. So I know it's also a real personal interest for you, and thank you for your leadership here. Look, it's also, as you said, it's also something I'm really passionate about. I was really lucky. I grew up in a household that placed a great deal of emphasis on education, and I had lots of opportunity, lots of encouragement, lots of support. But I also know that support, encouragement, and opportunity are not available to everyone. And as a big employer across the UK, I think we can do something to change that. And I think the two ways that we can do that, firstly, it's by helping people to develop skills, and we've already talked about that. But the other way that we can help that is by offering opportunities for employment. In our operations teams, about 48% of the people we hire were previously unemployed or came straight from education. We also have a number of programs that focus on specific underrepresented groups, whether that is military veterans, where we've just started a prison leaver pilot. We've got a fabulous program where we help young people with learning disabilities. And just last night, I was at a fabulous graduation event for a bunch of young people who are on what we call the Jobs Project. And that's something we're doing in partnership with Barnardo's, where we offer a 10-week pre-employment course for young people who've either been through the care system, so either care leavers or just vulnerable young adults. And since launching in 2021, we've helped more than 200 young adults to graduate, and we've committed to helping together more than 500 by the end of next year. And so I think one of the things that we can do as a big employer is offer opportunities to people who, for whatever reason, haven't been able to find those through regular education. And, you know, it's something I'm really passionate about.
You're clearly passionate about making an impact in communities. So alongside Gordon Brown and others, you helped set up the Multibank Initiative, which is about distributing surplus goods to families that wouldn't necessarily have access to that. And I think something like 2 million returned items have been distributed to more than 200,000 families. That's a big impact, right?
That's right.
Is that something that you're continuing to pursue as an initiative?
Yeah, absolutely. So the way, as you said, it works is we take surplus products. So they might be returned. They might be a pack of nappies that's been opened that you couldn't resell, but the nappies are perfectly usable. And we take those surplus goods from companies like Amazon, but other companies as well, and we get them to families in need. And we do that through a network of charities, community organizations, schools, social workers, healthcare workers. We started the initiative alongside Gordon Brown at the start of 2022 up in Fife. And we set ourselves a target of helping 13,000 families in 2022. By the end of the year, we'd help 50,000. And we thought, well, we're onto something here. This is really working. We opened last year in Wigan. And then by the end of last year, we'd helped 200,000 families. So far this year, we've opened in Swansea, and we're going to have three more openings this year. By the end of this year, we hope to have helped more than 500,000 families. So it's something that we're really invested in and we want to see grow. The three ways that we're helping, firstly, we're bringing donations from Amazon. Secondly, we're bringing our logistics expertise, helping to set up these click and collect warehouses where the charities and schools and so on can pick up the goods for the families in need. But the third way we're helping is with our people. People who are passionate about making a difference in the communities where they live and where they work, and they can see the difference this is having in the lives of people who need it the most. But as I said, this isn't just about Amazon. We've had some other brilliant companies who've got involved, the likes of Morrison's, the likes of Unilever, of Aquarol, of Pepsi. So if anyone who is listening would like to get involved, please get in touch. I'd love to hear from you.
Well, thank you for being part of that initiative, because it's clearly made a huge impact in just those three locations alone, right? You've been at Amazon since 2011. What a whirlwind career you've had, right? You started as the head of the media division. You've dabbled in fashion along the way. You've lived in the US. What a whirlwind experience. How have your prior roles, whether it was Amazon or even before Amazon, to be fair, how have they sort of shaped you and the role that you have today?
Well, you're right. So I've been with Amazon just over 13 years now, and I've worked in, we split our retail business into four divisions, and I had the opportunity to work in all four of those, both in the UK, and I spent almost 3 years in the US as well. One of the things that I've learned over my Amazon career is probably the most important thing you can do is really understand the leadership principles. So we have this sort of common currency, and it doesn't matter if you're working in fashion in Europe or you're working in our what we call our consumables business in the US, but the way we approach decisions, the way we think about problems is really similar. And one of our leadership principles is learn and be curious. And something I've really enjoyed throughout my career is learning. And stepping up into the country manager role just over 3 and a bit years ago, that was really important, because now instead of just the retail business, we've got Amazon Web Services. We've got an amazing creative industries teams, whether that's Prime Video or music or Audible or Twitch. We've got all the logistics businesses, whether that's our warehouses, whether that's our last mile deliveries. And one of the things that I do in my job is travel around, meeting different parts of the business, visiting our software development sites. We have four around the country. My roles before have prepared me to some extent, but probably the thing that's prepared me the most is just a willingness to go and learn. And I'm still as excited today as I was 13 years ago joining Amazon about learning about all the cool new things that are coming up.
If you went back sort of to your early career, young John, what would you have wished you'd known?
I think there are three bits of advice that I've picked up. One of them I did get on my first day at work, which was brilliant, and it was know what's on the back of your T-shirt. And the idea behind that advice is when you leave a room, what is it that people are going to say about you? What's the impression that you're going to cultivate? Are you someone who, you know, who makes things happen, or are you someone who raises issues all the time, for example? Related to that, the second bit of advice would be do what you say you will do. When I speak to lots of people, often at the start of their careers, there's lots of focus on, I'm worried that I might not be in the right team. Am I in the right sector? Have I got the right project? And actually, the most important thing that you can do, I think, in your career is do what you say you will do. Learn how to get things done in an organization. So I think that's really important. Then the last bit of advice, probably the most important, is don't take yourself too seriously. I heard this terrifying statistic. The average child will laugh about 400 times a day. Do you have a sense for how many times a day an adult laughs? 15.
Wow.
We spend way too much time at work. And I'm absolutely determined that if I'm going to spend lots of time at work, I'm going to laugh more than 15 times a day. I think it's really important that you enjoy yourself while you're doing, of course, very serious work. I think it's really important to do that. Now, at Amazon, we talk about three things of working hard, making history, but having fun. Sometimes, if we're not careful, we can forget to have fun. I'm determined we're not going to do that.
I love that. What sustains you beyond work?
Well, I think that, like most people, friends and family, really, really important. And some of the ways that I kind of try and maintain some sort of balance, I've started this year meditating. So I'll try and do 10 minutes a day. I think I've managed all but 2 days so far this year. And that's really important because there's lots of noise, lots of craziness, and just taking 10 minutes to try and shut that noise out, really important. The second thing is physical exercise. So whether that's going for a dog walk, just getting out into nature, or whether that's doing sport. I've picked up this year, I now have picked up playing hockey again after a long hiatus, playing the same team as my son, which I really enjoy. And then the last thing is, again, I read a book, a brilliant book a couple of years ago called 4,000 Weeks by Oliver Berkman. And 4,000 weeks is the average lifespan that you have if you live to about 80 years old. It's a terrifyingly short number of weeks. And I often think that, you know, when you get to the end of your life and you look back and you say, what am I going to regret? Am I going to regret not sending that extra email on a Saturday? Am I going to regret not working extra 2 extra hours? No, I'm going to regret not being there for my kids when they were growing up, or not being there for my family when they needed it. And I think that's really important. And what that means for me is being comfortable putting your laptop down at the end of the day and spending time with friends and family and trying to be present.
I think that last one will resonate with most individuals, no matter what age. This has been such an energizing conversation, as I knew it would be, John, with you. And what you said at the front, success and scale brings responsibility. It just hits everything you've talked about, whether it's about how you empower your colleagues, how you open opportunities, how you give confidence in AI, not just within your own business, but I think from listening to what you've just talked about, hopefully people will walk away with a bit more confidence around the opportunities of AI and not just worry about the safety risk of AI, because I think you can adopt it safely. You talked about social mobility, which I know you live and breathe, but that comes through in everything you do in your work environment too. So, you know, you sort of embody all the values of Amazon, not because of Amazon, but because that's what you stand for. Just a couple of other things I think worth taking away. Earning trust, and it doesn't matter who your stakeholders are, it's really fundamental to everything we do in business, and especially sustainable growth, because there is a trust element that what you're doing is not the disadvantage of something else, which is the first thing you said.
Yep.
What you are not is just there to make profit.
Yep.
You talked about willingness to be misunderstood. Well, a lovely way. I mean, I think on so many levels, I'd love to keep that in my little pocket. But deliver with a smile. And that's exactly everything you know you stand for too. So, and your three bits of advice: know the back of your T-shirt, wonderful. Do what you say you will do, and don't take yourself too seriously. Again, about having fun. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Bina.
Thanks for joining me today on Pull Up a Chair, whether you're at home, at work, or somewhere in between. I do hope you'll join me next time for more insights from business leaders and thinkers on how to unlock sustainable growth that delivers to the needs of people, planet, and profit. Goodbye.